Welcome to Spotlight on Cares on Sore Sound. Today we're sharing the voices of people whose lives are shaped by caring. These are the family members, friends, neighbours and loved ones who provide support every day, often without payment, recognition or even thinking of themselves as carers. Across Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, thousands of people help others with appointments, medication, transport, personal care, emotional support and everyday tasks that many of us take for granted. Yet many carers tell us they feel invisible. Some only discover years later that support is available to them. In this programme you'll hear from people with very different experiences. Some care for elderly parents or partners, some support autistic family members, some have cared through serious illness, dementia, mental health challenges and end-of-life care. Others are carers while managing disabilities and health conditions of their own. Their stories reveal common themes: the challenge of balancing caring with work and family life, the importance of emotional support, the difficulty of navigating services, and the value of being recognised and listened to. As Leicester City Council's Carers Conference takes place on the 10th of June 2026, these conversations offer an opportunity to reflect on the contribution unpaid carers make to our communities and to consider how health services, social care organisations, employers, community groups and neighbours can better support them. Most important, these are stories about people. People who care. People who give their time, energy and compassion to others. And people whose own well-being matters too. This is Spotlight on Care on Sore Sound. So let's start off. Tell us who you are and where are we?
Hello, Rob. My name's Mary. We're today in the Age UK building. And I'm here to chat to you because I'm a multiple carer and I myself use adult social care.
So what does that involve for you?
It's a number of things. As well as my own health conditions and the fact that I'm in a wheelchair, I was also the main carer for my father. He did have carers come into the house from an agency, but the day-to-day running of my dad's medication and his illnesses and getting him to appointments, that all fell to me. Sadly, my dad passed away last year. But even after that, there was things that still needed sorting. I'm also a carer for my 31-year-old son, he's autistic. And that's a different set of caring responsibilities.
What would you say are the kind of main challenges that you face?
Oh, goodness. I think recognition as a carer. I think the fact that my opinion is valid, but also the fact that organisations, health, adult social care won't let me speak on his behalf unless he's actually wrote a letter to say on this occasion mum can speak on my behalf. And that's difficult. If my dad had got an infection or something, the only way we got through the whole challenges with my father was to actually get a legal document, a legal power of attorney, which actually carried much more weight than me being his carer. And that shouldn't be so. It just adds another layer of complexity and financial burden to the whole caring responsibility.
So you're dealing with practical things like
Absolutely.
Health, your own health, your family's
Absolutely,
health,
yes. And
then you've got this other layer on top of it. So just tell us what the kind of things are that you, in general, that you might face, that you deal with. You use a wheelchair, adaptations in the home, transport around. What's the kind of things
transport
that you need?
Transport is a huge problem because, of course, not only was I in a wheelchair, my dad was in a wheelchair as well. So if my dad had an appointment at the hospital, the ambulance would come and fetch him. But then I would have to get there under my own steam and then find my dad and then find somebody to push my dad. It's just all those practicalities. You can't sort of sign up for, right, this is a situation, we're both in a wheelchair, I will need somebody to help me navigate the hospital with my dad. Those sorts of practicalities were very, very difficult. And organising the transport, organising appointments. They often would give my dad an appointment at 9 o'clock in the morning across the other side of town, and yet my own carers didn't start in time to get me up, to get me ready, things like that. So it meant that to enable me to get to my dad's appointment for 9 o'clock, I would have to get up at 4:30, get my carers there for 5. You know, those sort of practicalities. If you rang the hospital and said, we can't make this appointment, can you make another appointment? Can we have one in the afternoon? It might be another month, 2 months before you got another appointment in the afternoon. Or more often than not, you got another appointment in a month that was 9 o'clock in the morning again. So it's those sort of practicalities that make it doubly hard to care for somebody.
So who helps you with that? Kind of all of those, that bureaucracy and the paperwork and
nobody.
The information.
Family. I think, you know, I'm lucky that I have got other family around me. They can't navigate it either, but at least I've got them to, you know, have a rant or a moan to or whatever. But, you know, there doesn't seem built into any of the systems, either within adult social care or within health, the ability to recognise carers, and that a carer themselves might have difficulties. And I'm not alone in that. Over the years, I've been to many groups and organisations, and I would say a good 50% of people that are caring for somebody also have their own disability or differences. And so there ought to be a system whereby we can register ourselves with health on my dad's file, for example, to say his carer is also disabled and this is how we're going to navigate it. You're never going to cover all eventualities, but at least there's some that you could cover. And actually getting a doctor GP's appointment for my dad was a nightmare, because again, 8:30 in the morning, or, you know, really inconvenient times. And then how do I get there and get my dad there? Just a general GP's appointment was always a massive challenge.
So what kind of support do you actually get? So you talk about practical care for getting you up.
Yes.
And looking at you, you know, looking at helping you get about. What other kind of support is there for people like yourself?
Well, for myself, and I get adult social care in my own right, I'm very lucky. I get a social outing. That's all within my care package of adult social care. You know, getting up, helping me get meals, getting dressed, keeping the house nice and tidy. Adult social care helped me design that package to suit the life that I want. But unfortunately, there's nothing built into that to say, well, here's an element to help you as a carer. And I think that's something that's really missing from not only adult social care, but from health as well. And there's nothing there that recognises. The only good thing is that if you're a member of Age UK's carer's passport, if you go to the hospital wearing that, they will recognise you then as that person's carer, and that can be quite useful. So I would recommend people to at least register for that. It helps you navigate when you get to the hospital. You know, nurses will let you go in with the person that you're caring for if you've got your little passport with you. So that's very useful.
Who do you tend to turn to for advice?
Family, mainly.
Where do they get their information from?
Well, Google, of course. You Google a lot. There's a lot of information to support carers online, but it's only information. It's not anything that's tangible. There's nothing where you can get, you know, super transport from, or it's just navigating the whole thing. Age UK can talk you through things. You know, if you ring them up, they're very good. They'll say, you know, well, what about this? And they'll help you preempt some problems. But really, there's nothing in place to help carers navigate any of these systems. You've just got to work your way through it.
So if you had a message for people who are listening to this conversation, what would it be?
I would say you're worth it. Don't feel that you're doing a bad job, because just because you can't sort it out, it's the system and the way that health and social care work that are barriers to what you're doing. You're doing a really good job, you know, but register with Age UK, get a passport, and wherever possible, you can register with your own GP as a carer, and you can then have an appointment with your doctor's surgery as a carer. Unfortunately, at the minute, you can't register as a carer at the surgery of the person you're caring for, which is a bit difficult. If you could, at least you might be able to book their appointments. There was one other thing I've just thought of, Rob, but it's just gone out of my head. So, what's your question?
Would people listening to this, either individuals who are experiencing care or people who are providing it?
Right. I was going to say, make sure you register with Age UK. Make sure you tell your GP. Make sure you get the carer's passport. And if you get stuck, ask. Ask the person at the health, ring the department that you're speaking to and say, you know, explain, please, can you try and get me a better appointment? I can't get there at that such and such time. They don't always help, but if we don't keep asking, it's not going to change, is it?
So tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes, I am a carer from Asian background. Yeah, caring for relatives for many years, and still caring someone as well.
What does that involve?
In the past, I was caring for a person who was elderly, but same time she had many other issues as well. So my caring role was A to Z. Everything was involved really in it, including like taking her to the hospital, doctors, shopping, cooking for her, bathing. A to Z, everything was involving in that. Sadly, she passed away just a year and a half ago. And my current role is more work, because it's a gentleman. And he cannot speak much English. Same role. Got to ring for the doctors, go to take him to the hospital, shopping, everything. And nowadays, because this surgery, going to doctors and surgery or hospital is getting, like, you know, difficult and difficult. Getting basic appointment, you have to fill the form, and that person cannot speak English, so I have to ask him a couple of times, and has got other difficulties. He's got it took us really, really long to find out what was the issue. Initially, we thought it's a learning difficulties, but after many, many, many assessments and things like that, they diagnosed the person as he's got Alzheimer's, young on stage. So, yeah, that's my role.
And is that paid or unpaid? Is that like a family, or is it... What's the relationship?
For the person I was caring before, I thought it's my duty as a family member. And I never knew it's a carer, unpaid carer or carers. I never realized anything. I just did as my duty. So did I with my second role. I was doing the same thing. But since last couple of years, a friend of mine introduced the carer center. So, yeah, I've been a couple of times carer center, but I did not find that useful at the minute because I was not aware of that. What I was doing is unpaid. I can count as myself as an unpaid carer. I thought, no, that's my duty. I'm doing that, my duty. But then when I started here a few years back, again, a friend introduced me. And then I got into, start coming into groups and et cetera. Then I realized, no, I am a carer, unpaid carer, same time as a doing duty, but I am a carer, unpaid carer.
How did you find out information about how you could get support for yourself?
Initially, as I said, I didn't know anything about it. But when I went to Carer Centre, I got a little bit information. But then I didn't think I could go that get that support. But then since I've started coming here, Age UK, explained me everything. There's a carer's assessment, carer's passport, and there were many other information was available here. So I found out everything from Age UK.
And what was useful about that information? What do you think you were surprised about being able to access?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel really, really proud that I found this information. And also because, like, I like to talk, so I share my whatever I learned from here, I share with my other colleagues. Because Asian background, I think people think that's our duty, caring for, like, you know, a mother, father, or husband, or children. Who are you looking after? We feel that is our duty. And I would like to say to all Asian carers, just come out.
Try it again.
Navya. There is support available in all different languages. Please be, look after yourself and come out. Go to Age UK or go to local libraries. There are plenty of support and information available. So, I would request all Asian carers or whoever's not coming out, just come out and get information. Do not struggle, because I have struggled myself a lot. I am disabled myself now. Because of my caring role and all other duties, I keep caring myself and didn't get any support. But now I know, so even though I'm disabled and looking after someone, a family member, still I am very active and very happy with the Age UK provided support.
Do you think if you'd have been able to access better quality stories about people's care experience as a provider or as a receiver of care, do you think it would have helped you to understand it better?
Definitely. Obviously, professional support was there available, but when you come to the groups, you find out for other carers who is in the group. So you, like, you know, learn from each other, and you get so much benefit for coming out, not just only professional support, but you get social support, emotional, all kind of support you get.
Sometimes a group can reinforce incorrect information, and you need somebody from outside to kind of let you know, hang on a minute, this is like you say, with coming to Age UK, it's an external. What do you think that's like for people from the Asian community, because there's a strong community bonds, strong focus on family, and stepping outside of that is sometimes more difficult?
It is not only difficult, it is challenging. Coming out, that was the challenge for myself. So, coming out is challenging. But I think nowadays you get lots of information on social media, Google it and things like that. But stepping out of the house, that is really a big step. Also, because at the minute, because I have started volunteering just only once a week with other volunteers, where the group call is befriending group. So if you're feeling lonely or if you need any kind of support, we don't like exactly support you, but we guide you where to go. So definitely you get all kind of support.
How important is it to have the support for you as well? as the support for the person that you're caring about?
Yeah, definitely, because you don't know what you're doing. So if you know you get support, so you get the correct support. So in that way, you provide the correct support to you who you care for, because without support, it's very difficult. You just you suffer yourself, and you won't be able, because you're suffering, you don't know where to go and where to get support. So that's why you suffer yourself, and the person who you're caring, you won't be able to provide correct support. So it's really important to get correct support, and having done the carer's assessment, so then they will be able to support you, whatever appropriate support you required.
When you look back, and despite the challenges, what are you proud of as being a carer?
Yes, definitely, definitely. Because I came out and I'm carer, I'm caring, and with my experience, I just feel like going out and support other people. So, yeah, definitely proud. Because if I was in the house, I wouldn't be able to do anything. Because I stepped out, I've learned so much things. So I'm providing correct support. Also, because as I said, I'm doing volunteering. And not only volunteering, but whenever I see some person who is different background, I'm always willing to support them in what they would like to do. For example, ringing doctors or ringing social services, I always put myself forward to support them.
And if somebody's listening to your conversation and your testimony, what would you want them to take away from it?
Yes, definitely. One thing I would like Asian background carers, please do come out. There is support available. You could start with carers assessment. Come to the HUK and ask for support. So you can start with carers assessment, and then you will take it from there. But please, come out. There is plenty of support available.
You're listening to Spotlight on Care on Source Sound. So far, we've heard from carers whose experiences are very different, but whose stories share some common themes. Many people do not initially recognise themselves as carers. They see what they do as part of being a husband, wife, parent, son, daughter, grandchild, friend, or neighbour. Yet the responsibilities they carry can be extensive, involving appointments, medication, transport, advocacy, emotional support, and practical day-to-day care. We've also heard how many carers face barriers in accessing information and support. For some, it took years before they discovered what help was available. Others described the challenge of navigating health and social care systems while managing their own health, conditions, and responsibilities. One message is emerging very clearly. Caring is often hidden, but carers themselves need support if they are to continue supporting others. If you'd like more information about support available locally, Leicester City Council provides information about carers' rights, assessments and care services, while Age UK Leicestershire and Rutland offers free support through Leicester's Carers Support Service, including advice, information, wellbeing activities, carers' groups and one-to-one support. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience with care and what your experience has been like, what your journey's been like?
Well, my journey's been difficult because I didn't know about this caring support thing until about 15, 16 years later when I found out about this caring thing. My husband was ill and I didn't know about all these services at that time. I only found out in his last 2 years, I found out that we've got a caring support thing.
So you had a long-term experience of looking after your husband.
Yeah.
But you didn't get any assistance
anybody? I didn't know anything about this. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you?
Why was that? Was that because...
I didn't know. Nobody told me about it.
So was he ill and needed looking after?
Yes, he had a major operation in 2005, and he's been in hospital for 6 months that time, and after that he was not very well.
So nobody in the hospital or nobody in the GP asked you about care?
No.
So eventually, how did you find out?
I came to this coffee morning on a Friday, and this lady we were just talking, and she advised me to come to this carer support group that they're on, so I came here. That's the only reason I found out.
Tell us a bit about that group. What was that like when you first went? If you can describe it.
Well, I can't really. It was strange to me at first, but, you know, I got to know people, and they were friendly. So that gave me a break from my husband, you know, for 2 hours in the week. It was nice experience, like other people were in the same boat as me.
And so you could have conversations with people and...
Yeah, got to know them, share their experience with me as well.
And that, when you look back on that now, and that was that a turning point for you in terms of how you felt about being a carer?
Yeah, because being a wife and being an Indian wife, it's our job to look after. We didn't know. I was a carer at that time.
So it was the duty.
It's a duty for us.
Tell us a bit about that. So amongst Indian families then, that concept of duty.
Yeah.
Why is that so strong?
Married to a person or whatever, you know, it's our duty to look after them. It's not that, like, well, English people, they know more about it than we Indian people do. We didn't know we were carers at that time.
So in terms of realising that you could actually ask for help, how did that feel? Was that because you'd had this strong sense of duty? Was it a relief or was it like...
Yes, it was a relief because at least I can talk to somebody. And it's confidential to know all this.
And in a practical sense, not into a medical sense or anything, what did you benefit from that, having that conversations with people? What kind of things did it help you with?
It was sort of a relief that I can get it off my chest.
So the first part is really acknowledgement.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
What about the practical things? Did it help then to say, okay, well, look, you can get this help to do this?
Yeah.
Like get taxis somewhere, or you can get an appointment in a different way. Was there a practical thing that it made a difference to?
Not really, because my son was living with me, so he helped me a lot as well. So if I was down, he would take over and I could go out for a while and things like that.
So for you, the importance was not necessarily the practical, but the emotional support.
Yes.
Yeah. And so if you were, if somebody like you those years ago were listening to a conversation like this now, what would you want them to hear? What would be your message to them about
that? Just go out there and find out about all this information that they can get from social workers. At that time, we didn't have anything like that because I didn't even know anything about this caring thing.
Now, did you have to find the information, or did the information come to you?
No, the information came from the support group. It was a support group that helped me along.
So the key for this is be part of the support group.
Yeah.
And what was it, how did you know that feeling when you walk through a door and it feels like you're crossing a barrier or a bridge? What got you into the room? Was it somebody that you knew, or was it just...
I didn't know anything. A friend of I went to this coffee morning and this lady, she says, why don't you come here and try it out, see how you feel. And the manager was very nice. She was kind to me and spoke to me. And I feel, well, this is different, you know. At least somebody's listening to what I've experienced and what I've done.
So what would you, so it wasn't what you expected. What had you expected, something like that?
I had no idea at all.
So it was like...
Strange things happened. It's difficult for me to explain to you how it all came across.
Do you get support in other places? Is it like, you know, are you involved in other groups, or had you been involved in other groups?
No, this was the first group.
Right, because caring can put you off, you know, when somebody becomes ill, they get cut off from their social network. You're maybe not able to go to the temple, or you can't go to the same shops that you used to go to, or, you know, celebrate family occasions in the same way, because the danger is isolation.
Yes.
So, and particularly when you look, I mean, I'm thinking back to my mum's experiences when my dad was ill. It's a very isolating experience for that carer.
Yeah.
And the social network.
You can't go out to visit the people. You have to be in the house, so you can't go shopping or things like that.
And would you say you've got a social network now?
Yeah.
And how do you look at it differently than maybe you would have looked at it in the past? Because you know, when you're younger, you kind of think, oh, you're just going to breeze through life. You just go from one thing to the next, and then something happens, and it's like you have to think twice about things.
Yeah.
So what do you value now about that social contact, those people that you meet up with?
It's nice to meet people, but sometimes you feel you're not involved in their social life or anything, because everybody's moved on a lot. Nobody visits people anymore. You know, we don't want to get into that, I don't know how to explain, in that thing that, you know, I'd rather be, go out for a walk, go to the park.
We all live very separate lives these days. And
yes.
We don't have those connections, whether it's family or neighbours.
Neighbours, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's something that's changed in the
in
last
the
20
years. You might know about it as well, you know. No, like, you can't just... Earlier days, you can just knock on somebody's door and you can say, hi, how are you? And they'll let us come inside and that. That's not the thing now. You have to ring up before you can go to anybody's house.
To make an appointment. Yeah.
You understand, I'm trying to say.
So the social networks aren't there. So we have to provide alternatives.
Yes.
And they have to become specific groups.
Yeah.
If there's a label on that group, like this is a carers group, do you think that could be off-putting for some people, or is it something that, you know, it's
not a lot of people want to get involved in social, I mean, social cares, you know, groups and things like that. They go, we don't want to know. We're fine as we are. But in some cases, they're not, but they don't want to get the help.
And what advice would you give them to say?
I try and give my best to them, but if they don't want to know, you can't force anybody to come to the group and things like that.
But you benefited from going. So what would be the positive thing that you'd say to them? That
I'd say, come, have a look, have a chat with people, and you might get to good friends out of it, like I have with Geeta. Geeta's my friend. She's very good to me, and I'm good to her.
This is Spotlight on Caring on Soar Sound, and we're at the Bradley Centre. Bradbury. It's the Bradbury Centre at Age UK, and we're talking to people this week about their experience of care in Leicestershire and Rutland, and The next person I'm speaking to is...
It is Eleanor, but I am known as Lala.
Okay, nice to meet you. And do you want to tell us a little bit about your journey, your experience of needing care?
Yeah.
And then what you're, you know, what you've observed through that process?
Sure. So I was sort of like in 2015, I had a breakdown at work. I was a full-time teacher and senior science technician at a mainstream school. I was doing really well. I was doing everything that I'd been sort of working up to, because I'd left school with no qualifications to go back to the school that I'd actually failed everything in. I was rocking it. We just had Ofsted. I was very happy. I got a daughter. I was running a home, also looking after my father-in-law at home. And then I became very poorly, and I got psychosis. And then I got sectioned and got sort of like, I was hospitalised for quite some time, over about a 5-year period. Yeah.
So you were actually caring for somebody before then?
I was caring for more than one person. I was caring for a family member at home, and also I was caring for my father-in-law and my mum and dad, and working full-time and bringing up a daughter as well.
And then you needed care.
I did. So I'm cared for, and I care. I'm a carer. So yeah.
So tell us a bit about when. I mean, obviously not the details of the illness, but the effect of that, and in terms of how you were able to. Did you cope, or, you know, was that take a long time? What kind of support did you need to get to a point where things became a bit more stable?
Obviously, because I was held against my will, I didn't know what was going off. I was not me at all. I was completely broken, and I was medicated, probably rightly so at the time, because I was very, very poorly. And when I sort of like start, I wouldn't talk to anyone. I sort of, when I realised where I was, I felt so ashamed and felt so lonely. And I remember thinking, oh my, what about the people that I'm looking after? What's happened to them? I wasn't even thinking about myself, because I was unable to ask for help. And I was still, even when they were giving me leave in the hospital, I was at the Bradgate unit. I'm not ashamed to admit that now. I was. Back then, I felt so ashamed. All my colleagues just didn't know how to kind of handle me, I guess. No one sort of got in contact. They were scared to speak to me, because this diagnosis I'd been given, you know, I'd been given a diagnosis of schizophrenia. So I felt like the most isolated I'd ever felt in my life. And when they were giving me leave in the hospital, when I was going home, I was still looking after my father-in-law. I was still doing those things. I was still making sure that my parents were okay and the other two people were okay. And the hospital were unaware of this, so I kept going back on like a revolving door kind of situation. So I ended up on and off in that kind of hospital for nearly 5 years. And I got so scared about every time I tried to leave and they sent me home, I didn't know how to do me, because I'd lost my sense of identity. I didn't know who I was, because I'd cared that much. I'd forgotten who I was.
So what was it that got you the support that you needed? How did you didn't solve this by yourself?
No, I tried to. I wouldn't admit I was poorly. I refused. I was like non-compliant with my medication. So in the end, they did what they do. They call it depo. They medicate you without you have to be medicated, and you've got no choice. So literally every 4 weeks, they were chasing me around the ward, medicating me, and I was like, no. I was quite strong as well. I was quite fit back then. I've always been into my sports and stuff, and I was like a middle-aged woman just climbing the roof and stuff, and I literally did that just to get out and just to feel something. I used to run off because I just felt something, and I couldn't believe I was doing these kind of things, because normally that would not be me. I'm very kind, and I wouldn't do that normally, but I found myself feeling quite excited about the next time I could sort of escape, and it became like this thing, and it's because I felt something. So every time I came home, I think I was home for 2 weeks, and I ended up straight back in hospital because I couldn't go to the shops, I couldn't do any of the things that I'd done before, because I hadn't really done them because I was working. You know, my husband was getting the shopping. I wasn't doing any of those things. I was just working, going home, helping people, lots of people, and then going to work, not really doing anything for myself.
And it sounds like that's the kind of thing that you can't really cope with within the family, the close-knit family.
Mm.
It's too much... It's too... close, I suppose, is the only word I can come up with. It's too immediate for people to. You need some medical support, which is outside of that.
Yeah, I think the medication didn't work for me. It made me feel poorly. I was very sensitive to medications, and I just didn't like taking them because I didn't feel anything, and I just wanted to feel something. And for me, they weren't really helping, or I didn't think they were at the time. I mean, I do realise now I take them and it's like they do help me. I realise that. I didn't have any relationship with any of the professionals in the hospital because I didn't trust them. I became paranoid, which, you know, sort of like made that diagnosis that I had at the time of schizophrenia even more apparent. So it just stuck. But it's not what I had. It was care strain.
Because that sounds like it could be like an endless loop.
Yeah.
How did you get out of that loop? Was there a person and an organisation, a moment?
Yeah, there was a comedian that came into the hospital and he was doing a workshop. His name was Rob G. And I remember sitting there going in and out of a psychotic sort of situation. And this comedian, this bald-headed guy came in, and I thought, who's this idiot, you know? I don't want to engage in this. And I remember looking at him, could hardly open my eyes. I was so drugged up. I looked at him and I was like, he made me laugh. It's the first time I remember laughing and feeling something other than trying to run away from where I was. And he was able to ask a nurse to ask me to go for a walk. And he took me out for a walk in the community. And I remember going out of those hospital doors and being really scared because I didn't know how to do that anymore. After being so high functioning out in the community, you know, 5 years previous to that.
And what was it? What was the connection then between you and him? What was it that?
He's got a workshop that I got involved with at the Attenborough Arts Centre. He works alongside the Involvement Centre at the Raggate Unit, and there was. Another gentleman called Tim Sayers, who was head of arts and the creative side, and he does so much more than that, but trying to remember everything. I have loads of gaps in my life where I just forget things. I only kind of remember today because I think it's a very trauma based thing, but I remember these because these workshops really helped me, because they did poetry and creative crafts, and I was still an inpatient, but I remember I was sitting in pyjamas and stuff. I didn't have any of the clothes. I didn't want to get dressed. I didn't want to engage in like going out. I wanted to stay in the hospital even though I tried to escape, because I was scared to do all the normal stuff because I didn't know who I was other than a carer. I just, every time I had leave, I still went home and did that because I didn't know how to ask for help. I just thought it was my responsibility. And to be honest, when I was doing this, I didn't even know I was a carer. I didn't identify myself as a carer at all. I just thought it's family members, what you do.
What was the point, and so the kind of care process from that contact with the comedian and the art setting? So is there a point where you kind of got, do you have a care package? Did you get a care package put in place?
I did,
yes. What was the process for that?
I had numerous CPNs, community psychiatric nurses, and I kind of did build up relationships with them. However, unfortunately, due to funding, they were either pulled off me because I was deemed a little bit more okay, if that's the word. So I became ill again. And then when I got a new community psychiatric nurse, I didn't trust them and I didn't engage. And then I ended up back in the Bradgate unit again. And it wasn't until I got an individual, am I allowed to name?
First name,
Stacey, who came on board with me for City East. The City East, the mental health services there, is the biggest around Leicester and Rutland, I believe. She came on board, Stacey came on board, and I didn't engage at all. But I thought, I know you're trying to do something really beneficial for me here, but I didn't trust anyone. And then slowly, Stacey persisted. And I didn't answer her phone calls. I didn't turn up to appointments. And I thought I was going to get sectioned again. And I remember talking to David here and thinking, I'm scared they're going to section me because I'm not engaging in these services. And Stacey just kept ringing and she turned up and she wouldn't give in. And slowly, I became more trusting of these professionals, because I didn't trust my psychiatrist at the time, but I do now. For City East, lovely man, Mohammed. And it was Stacey, my CPN, who was able to signpost me and guide me through the services that I could go to that would help me. But at first I needed to admit I needed to ask for help, which I still have trouble with today. I still have trouble with asking for help because I think I've got to do it all myself, because I get so channeled into like caring. And I think it's that ADHD thing where you just, you focus on like, right, I've got my mum, she's struggling, I've lost my father 2 years ago, mum's struggling, and what do I do? So I'm kind of like writing plans down, and I get so focused that I forget to ask for help. And then I kind of like wait for David to come, really, or Stacey to ring and say, look, you need to ask for help. So I get a lot, I've got a social worker as well, so I've got a lot of people that are helping me now, and I'm happy that that's happening, because if I didn't have these people, I'd be back in the system again for sure.
If somebody was listening to this and you could say to them that the hardest thing is asking for help, what would you say was the best way that you overcame that?
I think it's to do with personalities, isn't it? It's like, because of the way I was, I didn't realise that I could ask for help. Even from being knee-high to a grasshopper, I never thought that was an option. I was always brought up to be like, you sort it out, you get it done properly, do the job well, bing, bang, bosh. And it's like, what would I say to people to ask for help? I think until you're in that situation and you have that breakdown, I think you don't realise that you need it. And when you're caring for family, because they're family, you just think it's what you need to do. You think that it's your duty. You love these people and you know them, so you think you're the only people that can help. But there's other people out there that can help. I mean, services like Age UK are awesome. You can walk in here, there's leaflets, there's the lovely staff, but it's knowing in your mind, it's knowing to do that in yourself as an individual. Because if you're just ploughing through things and it's all behind closed doors, it's not going to work. And this is where like these emergency support plans come in, and these kind of like leaflets that go out and the media putting it out there and just saying, look, that there is help out there, and signposting people and going out into the communities and asking anyone if they need help. But you've got to want it first. And I think it took that breakdown for me to actually realise that I'm going to start asking for help.
You're involved at the design of the emergency support package, is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah,
what,
I have been.
What have you contributed to that?
I've been in and out of this project for, is it project, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, for quite some time now, and I've always been able to come back on board. I've had a few dips where I've not turned up because of my mental health or my carer's duties. But I've always been welcomed back on board and always kind of like updated. Now we've got this wonderful emergency support plan, and I could have done with this with my parents at the time, because when my father was getting really poor, he had cancer, end stage 4 cancer. Nursed him at home. I just kind of turned up every day. I didn't really do, I'm doing it again, I didn't really do a lot. I did, but mum did it all, really. And then I'd turn up with my this lovely gentleman here, my PA, and it took for someone else to say, you know, we need to do this, this and this. But if I had this emergency support plan, it would have helped, because when I had to ring for Dad when he was poorly and he was in pain, or I was not in the house, Mum didn't know what to do if she had to call the emergency services, because my mum isn't able to read. She never learnt to read. She couldn't read medication packages. I couldn't always be there. I'm doing all sorts of other things as well, all caring duties. I'm trying to look after my own mental health as well. If I had this set up, the emergency support plan, it would have saved a lot of time. I'm ringing like the GP services for Dad. I'm also ringing the GP services for Mum, because Mum's having a breakdown and she's actually going through early stages of dementia at the time. I didn't know that. I couldn't identify that. And if this was in the house, it would have saved a lot of trouble. And a lot of time I was trying to update the GP, social services, and nothing married up. I had to kind of explain myself again and again and again. But with this new support plan, it would have saved me a lot of time and effort.
So are you pleased that you got involved in it?
I did. I'm very pleased. I think it's been needed for a long time, hasn't it? I mean, I might hand you over to...
No, we'll come back to it in a minute.
Yeah, okay.
I have not to say anything.
Who's interviewing who?
They get paid. They don't need to talk.
Fair enough.
Cool. Well, is there anything else you want to add? Because thanks for sharing your story.
I want to say to people out there who listen to this, really, I always want to try and contribute to society everywhere, really, that you do become more resilient, but it doesn't mean you have to neglect your own well-being. It's really important that, you know, you need to find your own identity. And to do that, you need to ask for help. I can't emphasise that enough. It's very isolating being a carer, whether that's for one person, two people. It depends on the complexities of that individual or those individuals. And it'd be lovely to have more recognition as a carer, because I think sometimes it's just like, oh, they're just a carer, or they're just a cleaner, or they're just a... whatever. But it's one of the most important jobs. I mean, I'm an LPA for both, you know, for my late father and my mum. I'm a lasting power of attorney. out of all the people in the family that were picked to be a lasting power of attorney in LPA, they chose me, and I'm the one with the most complex mental health needs. So you need to ask for help, and you need to do the stuff that you need to do as well to keep well, whether that's doing something creative or doing some sport. Just make a lot of time for yourself, because when you dip and you're not there, the people that you're caring for go into the system, and then you've lost them. So you get back on your feet again.
This is Spotlight on Care on Sore Sound. A recurring theme through these conversations is isolation. Many carers describe becoming disconnected from friends, social activities, employment opportunities, and the wider community. Others have spoken about the emotional impact of carrying responsibility for several people at once, often while dealing with their own health challenges. We've also heard how valuable peer support can be. Sometimes the most important thing is meeting people who understand the reality of caring because they have lived through similar experiences themselves. Another important issue is planning ahead. Many carers worry about what would happen if they suddenly become unwell, had an accident, or were unable to continue providing support. This concern has helped shape the development of the Emergency Support Plan, a co-produced initiative involving carers and professionals from across Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland. The aim is simple but important. It provides key information about the person being cared for, their needs, routines, medications, preferences and important contacts, so that if a carer is suddenly unavailable, somebody else can step in quickly and safely. The plan is designed to reduce uncertainty, improve continuity of care, and give carers greater peace of mind. Information about carers' support services, carers' assessments, carers' passports, and emergency planning can be accessed through Leicester City Council and local carers' organisations across the city, county, and Rutland.
So who are you, first name, and tell us what your kind of involvement was with the care experience.
Whenever? Okay, so my name is Raj, and I've been an unpaid carer for over 50 years. So I started out looking after my mum, who had physical and mental health problems, and my younger sibling. And as the years went on, sort of that continued to happen into all through my education. And that was an interesting experience. I'm really passionate about young carers because my experience in the education system as a young carer was really, really tough. I was getting detentions and sanctions and all sorts of things because I might be late or I might not get the work done in time or to the quality that they expected me to be able to achieve. But my priority was my mum was a single mum. You know, there would be an emergency at home and I'd be dealing with that, and her being alive or being well or being mobile was my priority. And I'd just be exhausted. School was my sanctuary and my sort of stability. But the support in school back then was not very, very good. It's sort of improving now. People are now recognising that young carers are part of the vulnerable pupil population, and they are supposed to be identifying as supporting carers more. So my children were young carers as well. And they had an opportunity to go and join a young carers support group through the service from Bernardo's, which we used to have in the city. Unfortunately, we don't have that in the city now, so there is a gap there. So I'm a multiple carer. I've been a multiple carer, like I said, for over 50 years, caring across physical health and mental health, learning disability and neurodiversity and complex health, right through to end of life and palliative care for various loved ones. Up until about a year ago, just under a year ago, I was a 24/7 carer. That is no longer the case. I'm more of a part-time carer now. It changes your world as a carer because your identity completely changes. Your social ability to be able to connect and maintain social life changes a lot. And I found that over the years, the more demanding my carer role was and the time it needed, which became 24/7, the more isolated I got emotionally and socially as well. I had people, I class as friends, but over time, the meetups and the connections and asking for help, it just dwindles. They sort of don't check in because they think, well, you're always busy anyway, I'm never going to get to see you. So that becomes quite a challenge to deal with. I'm a single parent myself with my own disabilities. And excuse me for my voice. My voice can be affected with one of my conditions. One of my conditions is long COVID, and it did affect my health, my voice. So I apologise for that. So I'm as a single parent with my own disabilities, I'm sort of juggling, looking after, you know, my children are now in their 20s, but I was looking after four children and my partner and travelling across town to look after my mum at one stage as well. And in recent years, I've been looking after although I was divorced from my children's father, I was supporting my in-laws as well, my parents-in-law, and we lost my ex-mum-in-law. So I helped nurse her through to end of life with her dementia. And I support my ex-father-in-law still, where I can, as I can. So it does, I had a good career going. I had an opportunity to sort of, you know, excel in my chosen career. But I found over time I had to cut down the hours to the extent that it became unattainable, to actually unsustainable to be able to do that. So I actually ended up having to just be at home because a lot of my time was going to hospitals, going to appointments, doing the care, doing the admin, doing the medications, all of the practical tasks that were required of me, as well as having to sort of maintain and try and maintain my own sort of home and garden and other life. But you can't go to work full time and give the best at work if you're having to do five laundry loads a day and be on ops through the night and you know, do personal care and be the emotional support and be the advocate at appointments with consultants or social care or other services that are involved, and be the voice for your loved ones when you're talking on their behalf to get the best support and service for them. And you know, I have had many occasions where I've had to go across to three different hospitals in one day because my daughter's been in one hospital, my partner's been in another, my mum's been in another. So it's exhausting trying to juggle not just being the advocate and making sure that they are heard and I'm involved as a partner in care to support any decisions made and treatment and seeing what we can do on discharge and how we can support them at home with the treatment plans decided. But also communicating their needs and challenges and struggles if they are not in a position to either remember or to share themselves with the clinical professionals. And the same with social care, being that mouthpiece for them. And having to juggle that as a multiple carer is trying to remember everybody's different needs and different challenges and different things, and trying to juggle their appointments and their medications and making sure I get it right for who am I representing today or on this particular occasion, and then timing that as a multiple carer in terms of who am I looking after today and what did I need to do specifically, as opposed to the usual regular routine of support that I'd be giving. But you're also there as a, you know, you're there as mental health, you're there as practical, you're there as nurse, you're there as driver.
What support do you get?
My social life, I know, you know, I have people at the end of the phone if I need them, if I really desperately need them. But on a day-to-day, there's no support for me as a single parent. Quite isolated. I know that I can access the carer support service through Age UK if I need to, and when I'm able to, but with timings and dealing with medical crises sometimes, or just the day-to-day caring, sometimes the timings of being able to access the services available to me aren't necessarily there. So just having support with peers through lockdown, a lot of us were isolated, so I ended up setting up an online, and I'm not a tech person at all, but I set up a platform for carers' health and wellbeing, the Carers' Health and Wellbeing Forum, just so I could meet other carers, but also support other carers in the same position as me who were completely isolated. Because especially in lockdown, you know, if we were taking people to appointments or we were, you know, loved ones to day activities and other opportunities for them, it might give us half an hour to go and have a coffee and just have a break. And that wasn't happening. So in terms of peer, I suppose there's the peer support platform, which is still going. Just to support, so you know that you're not on your own. What I'm going through, what I'm feeling is not unusual. You know, we support each other, we share tips with each other, we can share advice and information with each other. I've reached out to social care several times to get a carer's assessment, and I've had lots of different experiences, some really nice ones and some not so positive ones. I would say probably I've only had one really decent one, which was the beginning of last year. But previous access to support and find out what support there is for me as a carer has not been as good as I'd hoped it would be. And there seems to be some sort of postcode lottery in terms of the quality of support and understanding of what my support needs might be as a carer. So that's quite hard because, you know, and sometimes when I've reached out for support, what I get is it's well-intentioned, but it focuses on my cared for and how they can be supported better and what I could do to help them and to look after them and sort of focuses on their needs and how we can have solutions to do that. But it feels that I still can be invisible. My needs, my struggles, my challenges, and even just for my own healthcare needs and my well-being needs, they're not as well supported. I mean, it is literally services like, you know, our Leicester Carer Support Service that are absolutely sort of, they're a rock for so many people, because now they've started to offer online opportunities. Sometimes it's easier to be able to access things like that and have a timetable of activities where you can just drop in if you get an opportunity to do that. But it's really hard just be able to walk out. I think just having things locally would be much more helpful in terms of having somewhere that I don't have to travel to and then have to organise caring replacements and things like that. So I don't have a lot of support, and juggling the different things that I'm juggling, it is hard. And in terms of practical support, there isn't really any, because sometimes it takes longer to try and train somebody up and it'd be agreeable to want to take over what I just naturally do as part of my auto. People aren't always willing to do the same level of support that I'm putting in. So it can be really hard to get the quality of support for me to be able to get out and have a break, for me to be able to go out and do something I'd like to do. But also in terms of poverty, you know, I've been thrown straight into poverty because of my role over time. When I was working full time, I had a pretty good job. I had a good role. So I could save, but all my savings went very quickly. Because I couldn't apply for any benefits and I didn't want to, because that money would have gone away from my loved ones' benefits, and I didn't want them to lose money that they were entitled to. I've sort of been thrown into poverty, so even if I wanted to and could go out, I can't afford to. You know, I love the arts, I love theatre, I love being able to travel. You know, I'd love to be able to get out to the sea and get a bit of therapy from the coast, and just going to the theatre or going to live music or, you know, going to different events and things and going out to different areas of nature. I'd love to do that, but I can't afford it practically or financially, which is hard. So I'm grateful that we have online, you know, podcasts, and we have online things that I can do at home, but it doesn't get me away from the four walls, basically. So I try and find my own support. I try and sort of find my own ways of dealing with stuff. I do my own sort of ways of doing mindfulness and meditation, and music is basically my therapy. You know, music can lift me or bring me down or be my escape, like reading used to. But I struggle to find the time to read books now, but I love books. But just something that helps me escape is my support for me that I've had to find for myself. And it's those sort of practical things that we don't necessarily get given help on when you're looking out. And as a carer, you don't necessarily know what's out there. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what questions to ask. You don't know what offers are out there. It's quite a challenge of knowing, being able to have the time to look around, see what support is available, and then be able to access it in a way that's timely, but also meaningful. I think that's quite a challenge, particularly if you're a multiple carer, because once you finish dealing with one person, you're dealing with another person. You're not necessarily freed up with the multiple duties that you've got, and then having to manage my own health and well-being at the same time, that could be quite hard.
So this is Spotlight on Care on Soul Sound, and now I'm joined by
Georgia.
And what's your involvement with the care process, Georgia?
So as part of family life and life in general, I guess, Rob, I've become a carer for family members that have needed that extra support, so I classify myself as an unpaid carer. I think more recently that has been through the end of life journey for an elderly family member that needed support, probably more support than I'd had imagined have needed, and just kind of stepped in naturally of that process of being what was granddaughter but then become carer naturally over time of how things change. I don't think I realised at the time that I was classed as a carer, an unpaid carer of what I was doing. I just thought it was something that, you know, as granddaughter, that's what I should be doing, or should be there to support that person. But it's only when you speak with other people that you realise that actually you are in that caring role, and often doing more than what that relationship probably was before, which can change that relationship. And it can be difficult. It can be difficult.
Do you find, is age, and you're younger than everybody else I've spoken to for this, is that an issue in terms of people's expectations about the sense of who and what is involved in, who's involved in care and what's involved in care?
Not necessarily from my perspective, but I guess from others that, as outsiders I've spoken to, probably get that sense of people thinking, is it your role to be there, being that caring person, of fulfilling those duties for family members? But at the same time, I don't see it as, once you reach a certain age, that's what you become. I think naturally families evolve into becoming carers as maybe loved ones go through the life journey, and we're probably seeing that more and more as people across the city and families are living longer, have different care needs, that different family members naturally just become a carer, but it could be at any age. There's often people that are young carers that are supporting siblings, parents, grandparents around the city. But I think if people do consider who is a carer, maybe they do think of an older person caring for an even elderly person. But that is not true of what is actually out there and people doing caring roles. It can be at any age, and it could be for anybody at any age. But I think, from my own experience of, you know, where do I go for support as somebody, you know, in their 30s, caring for family members, trying to
manage my own family life, my own work life, and being a carer, what other support is out there potentially for younger people that are carers, and even younger people than me that are caring for loved ones or family and friends. Because I have been to some groups, and as you say, it's probably people that are older than me that are part of a network. And so how do we make others aware that they are a carer or an unpaid carer, and how do they feel about then approaching other networks and forums and groups to feel like they're being supported in their journey? Because of, I think from a personal reflection, I often put the person that I care for at the heart of what I'm doing. And it's only then when other people say to me, if I'm probably getting to breaking point, that maybe you need to take a step back. Because unless you're feeling supported and at your best, you're not then able to support and help other people. And it's often then that wider network of other people that we need that from. But as you just said, if you feel that you're going into an environment or looking for support and don't feel as though you can see that reflection of others, do you then shy away from that? And I think that has probably been what my experience has been.
So what have you found, and what have you been able to access, and how has it helped?
I think looking online, in particularly, from my perspective, to look for other groups of what's out there, speaking with colleagues when I'm at work of knowing what support's available, going to support hubs, and there's various hubs around the city, and probably across the county and wider areas for other people as well, of having an opportunity to go somewhere quite informally. So that is an opportunity to talk to people, but also feels like a bit of a step away from that caring role in when you're in the midst of doing that, but being able to then have that short breakaway and talk to other people that are going through similar journeys, to know that you're not the only one going through that. Because sometimes it can feel, when you're in the midst of caring, particularly for somebody, in my recent experience at the end of life, you feel that sometimes you're on your own doing that. But it's not. It's a life journey that lots of other people are experiencing or have experienced, and can.
It kind of doesn't get talked about much.
No.
You know, we talk about what we can get out of things, but we don't talk about the things that we, how we care for things, and you know what we care for. We tend to be what we can take from something. How do you, in terms of interacting with colleagues and peers, how do you find people's perceptions of you as a younger carer in that way?
I think it's positive. I think it's good of recognition of being able to talk with people, and that conversation often normally feeling like it's probably just part of natural conversation when you're in the office and saying how things are going and what's been there, of offloading a little bit sometimes, but in a normal setting, so that what you're saying to other people and their inputs is that you're then able to think, actually, it's day-to-day life, and you're not feeling like you're being singled out or having to go to a particular place to feel like you're part of, even though, you know, that is absolutely important, and I still do that in life. But when you're in the day-to-day of work, just chatting to other people about what things are going on and how things are, is really important. And I think that having that normality of being able to work alongside caring, which sometimes can be difficult, but the flexibility of organisations that recognise people are carers and unpaid carers, that can have an impact. But still turning up to work, being able to talk about it flexibly, is a way that people can still feel supported and still feel that they've got their independence as a carer whilst they're also supporting a loved one or a friend through their journey.
And what's your coping mechanism? What advice would you give somebody listening to this as to having good coping mechanisms? Have you tried many different things, or is it still in a work in progress?
Maybe a bit of both, actually, Rob. I think taking time out yourself, I think, is really important. I think when you are caring for people, particularly at the end of life, it's very difficult because you want to be there constantly for them. You want to be the one that's helping them, making sure that whatever they need, you're the one that's there, because you're the constant for them. You're the, particularly in my case, you're the go-to person they feel comfortable with. They feel settled. They know you the best, as opposed to other people that can support. But you need to recognise that you can only be there for them if you're at your best yourself. So that often requires you to take a step back sometimes and allow and be willing to accept support from other people as well, so that you are able to be there for the people that you care for. And even though guilt sometimes steps in with that, it's that separation and boundaries of knowing that you are a carer, yes, it's important of what you're doing, but you are still able to live a life as well. And even though there may be, through the journey, times where caring becomes the main thing day in, day out for periods, there may then be other times where there's support available that you can take that step back and go off and do breaks or go into work and then come back to it, which allows you then hopefully to be at your best, to be making sure that the person that you're caring for is okay, and that you ultimately are okay.
Tell us who you are and tell us what your involvement is with the care process.
So my name's Ross. I'm basically a project manager at Leicester City Council, and I've been involved in a project to co-produce the emergency support plan for over 18 months or so now.
And what's that involved?
So the co-production is involved getting people with lived experiences together with professionals to talk about the emergency support plan, why it's necessary, what we want in it, how we're going to use it, etc.
And what's that process brought out? What's gone into the emergency support plan model or framework?
Well, what it's brought out is a co-produced emergency support plan that is that will be available for carers, unpaid carers across Leicestershire, Leicester City and Rutland County to complete and keep in a safe place, so that in the event they're unable to provide support for their loved ones, there's some information somewhere that someone can come in, pick up and continue to provide that support for them. And what the co-production process has enabled us to do is speaking to professionals and people with and carers, we make sure that information in that plan is the information that we need and the carers want.
And what kind of challenges has the process of talking with people and doing that co-production brought out that's changed yours and your colleagues' perception of how this might work?
Well, the biggest challenge has been trying to get the succinct information. There's so much, when you talk about carers, there is such a wide variety in the type of care provided. You're talking about everybody really. And so trying to get one plan that fits so many different needs has been a real challenge, to get it down to, just keeping the relevant information to make it workable.
And where are people going to be able to find out more about this?
So they'll be able to, they should be able to access it through their care commission services. So in county, that will be Vassal. In Rutland, that will be through Rutland County Council. And in Leicester City, that's through Leicester Carers Age UK.
You've been listening to Spotlight on Care on Sore Sound. Today we've heard from people whose caring journeys span many different experiences. We've heard about caring for elderly parents, partners, children, relatives with disabilities, people living with dementia, and those experiencing mental ill health. We've heard from people who provide care while managing disabilities and health conditions of their own. We've also heard from young carers and people whose caring responsibilities have shaped much of their lives. Despite these differences, several common themes stand out. Many carers remain invisible. Many struggle to find information at the right time. Many experience isolation, financial pressures, and challenges navigating complex systems. Yet we've also heard about resilience, community, friendship, and the difference that good support can make. One of the strongest messages from today's contributors is that carers should not have to face these challenges alone. Asking for help is not a sign of failure. Accessing support can improve the well-being of carers and the people they care for. If this programme has raised issues that affect you or someone you know, support is available. Age UK Leicestershire and Rutland provides information, advice, careers groups, well-being activities, carers passports, training opportunities and one-to-one support through the Leicester Carers Support Service. Across Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, carers can also request a carers assessment, access a carers passport that helps identify and recognise their role, and find information about emergency planning and contingency arrangements. The carers passport is recognised across the area and can help carers access support and services when they need them. To find out more, visit Leicester City Council's carers information pages, contact Age UK Leicestershire and Rutland, or speak with your GP practice about registering as a carer and exploring the support available to you. For everyone who provides care, whether for a few hours each week or around the clock, thank you for everything you do. This has been Spotlight on Care on Source Sound.